Take this cup from me. Yet not my will, but yours be done. An angel from heaven appeared to him and strengthened him. And being in anguish, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. When he rose from prayer and went back to the disciples, he found them asleep, exhausted from sorrow. "Why are you sleeping?" he asked them. "Get up and pray, so that you will not fall into temptation."
Sometimes as a speaker, your heart sinks when you receive a particular Bible text to preach on. And that, to be honest, was the case for me when I received this one. I really struggled with having to speak about this particular passage from Luke, the penultimate week in our series on prayers that shape us. And the reason is very simple. To talk about this part of Jesus' life is, I believe, to be standing on holy ground. This struggle in the garden is unique, one that only Jesus could experience. It was something only he could do, and he did it for us. There is something profoundly sacred about it. It's a passage which, if I ever speak about it like today, my words always seem so inadequate. And so I'm going to keep it simple. Aware of the holy ground we are treading on, I will say a few things about this prayer of surrender, and then we'll look about how that might link with our own prayers. Sometimes I think it's difficult for us to enter into the depths of agony in this passage, because we view it through the lens of Easter Sunday. We need somehow to overcome that challenge. We need to set aside for a moment the end of the story, the empty tomb, and fully experience the gathering gloom, the darkness, the fear, and the pain. These verses tell us the story of Jesus' last recorded desperate prayer before the cross. Here in this garden, it is as though the universe is momentarily still, as this one man carries the weight of the cosmos on his shoulders. The angels hold their breath. All of heaven waits to see what choice he will make. We know the answer, but this was a genuine moment of decision on which hung the future of all creation. Jesus could have taken another way, told his Father it was too much to ask. As the first garden represented the place of rebellion, now everything, absolutely everything, rests on this garden being the place of surrender. The future of the entire universe rests on this one prayer. This was a turning point for Jesus and for us. The salvation of the world hung in the balance as the Son of God sweated it out in Gethsemane. The change in Jesus is sobering at this moment in the story, isn't it? He's been so calm, telling his disciples he's heading to Jerusalem to die. He has even rebuked Peter when Peter tried to divert him from that task. But now, here in the garden, it's different. Now, he's nearly there. He is facing no ordinary death. Jesus knew what crucifixion was like. He had seen the roadside crosses, heard the desperate fight for breath. He was in anguish, agony, Luke says, using a word used of someone fighting a battle whilst terrified. And Jesus faces not just physical death, but an emotionally and spiritually lonely death like no other. One where he will be utterly isolated. He glimpsed ahead the emotional and spiritual pain of the cross with its crushing separation. Every power of evil would center on Jesus, a satanic maelstrom in the darkness and God-forsakenness of the cross. And so, he is afraid. Afraid of the cup, an Old Testament term for both suffering and judgment. Psalm 75:8 refers to God's judgment for evil as a cup which the wicked of the earth drink. Isaiah 51:17 uses the same image, but later in that same chapter, verse 22, God promises to take the cup away so it will never have to be drunk again. That is what is going to be made possible on the cross. But first, Jesus must surrender to this costly plan. He knelt to pray. Mark's gospel says he fell on the ground. The usual posture for prayer was standing, lifting hands to heaven. Prostrating himself shows even more the depth of Jesus' distress. He is throwing himself on God's mercy. And Luke, the doctor, records his sweat like drops of blood, a sign of extreme stress, which is medically recognized. His prayer is a lament. It's not a polite, controlled request, but gut-wrenchingly real, torn from his personal distress and for those he loves who will be devastated by his death. Please, Father, please, Abba, Daddy, please, is there another way? And the answer he gets from God, the Father from whom he has never been apart, is a simple and stark one. We don't know how he receives it. Is it the silence from heaven or some direct answer? Either way, it is clear. No, son. There is no other way. An answer you sense is wrenched from the heart of the Father with as much pain as it is heard by the Son. At this moment of desperation, Jesus needed his closest friends with him. And he asked them to pray that they will not fall into temptation, literally, that they won't come to the trial. The events to follow will open a pit of cowardice, betrayal, and denial into which they could so easily plunge and never emerge. Worn out by the day, by confusion and anxiety about all Jesus has shared, it is sleep and not prayer which overtakes them. It is an angel who is sent to strengthen him. Peter has boasted he will stand firm. James and John that they could drink his cup. But when it comes to it, they just don't have it in them. They've watched him raise Jairus' daughter. They've watched him be transfigured. But watching his agony, that is more than they can bear. And they lose themselves in sleep. If we compare the gospel accounts, it's clear Jesus finds them sleeping three times. Three times Jesus has to wake them. Three times, as Peter would betray him three times and be lovingly restored three times. You sense Jesus' gentle disappointment. Still sleeping, friends. Jesus is not physically alone yet, but he is in other ways and will become more so in this terrible night, an evening of betrayal. Judas already snaking his way towards them with the arrest party, the fleeing into darkness, the denial at cockcrow. This was not a brief arrow prayer, but a sustained, desperate wrestling. It's not that God doesn't hear him. This is a prayer that is burrowing itself deep into Jesus' will. Your will be done. Jesus is still going to suffer. But that time in Gethsemane connected his will and the Father's will so deeply that he was somehow able to endure everything that was ahead. As someone put it, the salvation of the world hung in the balance as the Son of God literally sweated it out in Gethsemane. And he won. So what about us? Jesus' situation and his prayer was unique. Knowing that, then, how can we apply it to us? How can we learn how this kind of prayer can shape us? Particularly, perhaps, when the way ahead for us also looks frightening or unclear. Well, first of all, it's important to say that the prayer of surrender is not about caving into something which is not what God would want. It is absolutely not about accepting abuse or injustice. Jesus was seeking to be clear what was God's will, and then giving himself to take that path. That's the kind of prayer of surrender that we're talking about. God, show me your plans and give me the strength to be a part of them. Secondly, in this moment of profound crisis and uncertainty, Jesus turns to God and not from him. He doesn't distrust God. He doesn't disbelieve him. He doesn't distance himself from God. I don't know about you, but I have done all of these in moments of personal crisis. But Jesus prays. And he prays with absolute honesty and raw desperation. No pretense. The place to start for us when the way ahead is unclear is the same. It doesn't remove the pain any more than it did for Jesus, but it can give us the strength to face it. And then it's important to recognize that there are different ways to pray these same words, "Your will be done." We can pray from helpless submission, angry resignation, or deep resentment. But a prayer of genuine surrender is not a prayer of denial. It's not spat out through gritted teeth. Jesus comes through his pain to a place of trust. And that is sometimes so very difficult, but it is possible for us too. And do listen to Duncan's sermon, as Kay's mentioned, from last week, if you haven't already. Also, it's important to recognize that the prayer of surrender did not start in the garden and would not end there. The prayer of surrender started in eternity as Father, Son, and Spirit planned our rescue. It was prayed throughout Jesus' earthly life. It was prayed in the desert when the temptations were at their height. It was prayed when, as Luke says in 9:51, Jesus set his face resolutely to go to Jerusalem, where he knew he would die. It would be prayed again, no doubt, on the cross, as the thief yelled a challenge to save himself and them. It's the same for us. If we're Christians, at some point, whether in a moment or over time, we have given ourselves to Jesus. But we will need to do so again and again. Sometimes it will be in the ordinary moments when we realize we've stepped away from following God, whether briefly or over a longer time. Sometimes, as for Jesus, it will be when we face the hardest of circumstances, ourselves or someone we love. The prayer of surrender is to be prayed both at certain moments, but also as an ongoing part of our lives laid down. Paul, in his letter to the Romans, urges us to offer our bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God, and tells us this is the true meaning of worship. And maybe for you this morning, you know there's something yet to be surrendered. Getting to a place of surrender where we know what God is asking of us and can say yes can involve time, prayer and fasting, help from others. We might need to reflect on God's faithfulness, on Bible verses, do journaling, somehow to allow our wavering trust to take root. It can be helpful to think about some of the Bible characters who learnt about surrender. Abraham, who surrendered Isaac. Moses, surrendering his fear. Mary, surrendering her future. And finally, Gethsemane was both an olive grove where things were grown, the fruit was maturing, but also the place where the olives were pressed. They are crushed. But what comes from that squeezing, the oil, is incredibly precious. God wept in Gethsemane. God weeps over us when the prayer of surrender takes everything from us. But somewhere in it all, something beautiful can be created. We have the opportunity in prayer to respond slightly differently this morning using an ancient form of prayer called the breath prayer. It's really easy to learn. It can be done any time. And there's some details out on the tables, but okay, maybe we can also send them round by email later. That would be helpful. It's a version of what Paul calls praying always. It's really simple, and it happens inside of us because you can't breathe and speak at the same time. Well, I've never learned to do that anyway. But inside, as we breathe in, we say part of the prayer, and it can be anything. And as we breathe out, we say another part of the prayer. So we're going to do that this morning. And it may be that there's a particular situation that's on your mind. And if so, as I use a part of Jesus' prayer, please take the opportunity in the pause to put that situation into God's hands. And we'll do that three times. Let's pray together. Father, yet not my will, but yours be done. Father, yet not my will, but yours be done. Father. Yet not my will, but yours be done. Amen.
Let's remain seated as we sing the first two verses of this song as we close.